Halacha always reflects reality, according to Maimonides, and man that he must always look at reality and live according to reality. The people who are escaping from Egypt, don't imagine that you're just going to escape and rely on God. Yes, God is assisting you, but you have to be rational. If you're going to have stragglers that are going to be exposed to the enemy, they're going to get killed. That's what's going to happen. There's no two ways about it. What God will do for you, you can never live an irresponsible life and expect God to intervene. That's not going to happen. That was the idea, according to Maimonides, of the halacha reflected. The halacha is very complex, very deep, but according to Maimonides, it reflected at the bottom, it reflected the main principle, the concept that man is living in reality and has to always recognize reality, not try to escape, try to use his mind and his intelligence to live within the framework of reality. That's why Maimonides' answers, Maimonides' explanations are not appealing to people, because most people are looking for religion to get them out of reality and to get them into a fantasy life. That's not what the Torah teaches. Okay. Basically, to get back to the main point, I would just like to give a definition of what Torah teaches us. What is the book? This is God's book. What does God's book teach us? Okay. Obviously, God's book cannot teach us everything about God, because our knowledge is very limited, and we can only understand a certain amount. But the Torah does teach us, the subject matter of the Torah does teach us something about God. What does it teach us about God? It teaches us how God relates to the universe, the laws of nature, and how and when he intervenes with these laws. That is basically the most fundamental concept that the Torah teaches us. It teaches us how to live a good life, and it teaches us when God intervenes, when he doesn't intervene. Okay? And this is a great knowledge that the Torah conveys to us, but we have to approach it carefully and never deviate from what the Torah says, and then we can gain some insight if we do it properly. All right? Not rashly, not according to our emotions, but according to the principles of the Torah itself. Okay? Now let's proceed slowly. When God created, okay, and he placed them in the Garden of Eden. Now, this Garden of Eden was a wonderful place to be. Okay, we'd all love to be there. Now, the question that we have to ask is, what kind of a place was this? Did God tell man, look, I have created a fantasy land for you, and all you have to do is just sit back and relax, and you're just going to have ultimate pleasure. No worries. Just complete pleasure. That's what most people think. That's what most people want, would like to have that situation. But when we look at the Torah itself, we don't find that that is true. First of all, we find in the creation of man that God speaks about man, and he says that man has a divine element. The divine element is knowledge, the ability to understand. Then God says that he instructs man to be fruitful, multiply, and to have dominion over the animals of the earth, and and to conquer, to be able to conquer the earth, which is means to be able to control the forces of nature. The only creature in the universe that has the ability to control the forces of nature. Every other creature is simply controlled by nature. You take away the habitat of an animal, that's it. The animal cannot survive. Man can take the laws of nature and bring it under. That was the first injunction given to man. So we see immediately that God created man with an intelligence, and he gave him an injunction to use that intelligence insofar as his life is concerned, to exercise his intelligence over the natural law, and to be able to use that intelligence to carve out for himself a good life. But it wasn't a passive situation. God didn't say, sit back, don't do anything, and you're just going to have total pleasure. Okay? It was a mandate. Now the question is, let's take a look at the Garden of Eden. When God placed man in the Garden of Eden, Was it for man just to relax and just enjoy himself? Doesn't seem so. Take a look at Genesis 2:15. It says, after the description of the garden, it says, And God Almighty took the man, and he placed them in the Garden of Eden to work it and to watch it. What does that mean? What is to work it? Apparently, Adam had to work over there. We never think of Adam working in the Garden of Eden. What kind of work did Adam do in the Garden of Eden? He had two things. He had to work and to watch. So it wasn't something that just happened by, he couldn't just relax all day and enjoy himself. He couldn't even just think all day, okay? The way the Torah describes his primary activity, he started to classify the species, and he was thinking. Yes, he had time for that, but he also had to work the garden. What did he have to work the garden? What's the answer? What kind of work was this? And how do we distinguish that work from later, the curse that God says, with a sweat of brow, you'll work the land? The answer is, when God placed man in the Garden of Eden, contrary to popular opinion, this was a continuation of the Adam that God created. The same mandate that is given in chapter 1 is more specific in chapter 2. And the mandate was to live according to reason and to exercise his knowledge. And he has to work because this garden operates according to natural law, and man has to use his intelligence in order to secure for himself a happy environment in the garden. So he has to work the garden, he has to use his intelligence on how to work the garden, and he has to also guard it, okay? The only thing that he didn't have, which was given later in the curse, was, as the Torah describes, he didn't have the bramble bushes, the weeds, and the unwanted growths, which was a curse that was given to him later. But he was able to effectuate his need, have his life, his needs, and he didn't have any intervening things that were harmful that would come in and undo what he did. That he didn't have. When he worked, he had the results of his work. But the work was able to be successful according to a logical plan, because God created a logical world. Everything works according to reason. He gave man an instrument through which he could have knowledge and understanding, and through which he could be successful. But that was his mandate. His challenge was to live according to reality. There was only one commandment that God gave him at that time. What was the commandment? The commandment was, there's one tree that you cannot eat from. What was that commandment? The commandment was not to allow his imagination to overpower him. Not to think that one tree that he can't eat from, this is the greatest thing in the world, and if I only had that, who knows what kind of enjoyment. In other words, his mandate was to overcome his fantasies. And that's why you see in the biblical text how beautifully the Torah describes the sin. When man sins, it gives a vivid description of the alluring qualities of the tree. And that is, I'm not going to read it for you, but you'll take a look at it. It's in Genesis 1. I'm sorry, Genesis 2. I was mistaken my print over here. I don't know, what's it, Genesis? This I have a misprint over here. I'm sorry. It's 3:6, okay? 3:6 gives a vivid description of the tree. Why does it give such a vivid description? It's good to the eyes, and et cetera, et cetera. The reason is because here the Torah is describing man's imagination and his fantasy. So he only had one challenge. The challenge was live logically, work the garden according to reason, and don't let your fantasy overpower you. That's all. If you lived that way, you would have been fine. Okay. Now, but you must remember the fact that the Garden of Eden was a logical situation where he had to use his mind. It wasn't a situation where he was just able to lay back and just have eternal pleasure. That was not the purpose of man's life. And that is not the purpose of man's life. So man, you see, was given a challenge, a charge, where he is responsible. He has a responsibility. Now let me just bring this down to a practical level, okay? It means to say that our world is a world in which, if man discharges his responsibilities properly, he will have one set of consequences. If he doesn't discharge his responsibilities properly, another set of consequences will be encountered by him. Okay? To give a simple illustration, if people, if you have a family living on the living on the fifth story in an apartment house, and parents allow toddlers to play by the window, and they are careless, then that means they are not living according to logic and reason, and the children will fall out the window, and they will get killed. Okay? If man lives according to reason, and he is careful, he will avoid that catastrophe. The results, the way a person lives, if a person lives according to reason and reality, and that's why I mentioned before, Maimonides says that the halacha always tried to teach man to abandon primitive ways of life and to recognize reality and to live according to reality and to realize that you have a responsibility. Now, let me just explain the following. If the world was created in such a way that parents, let's take that example we just gave, parents who are negligent and simply go to sleep and they allow the little toddlers to play by a window on the fifth story. Now, if the children would fall out the window and God would somehow magically save them, so you understand we would be living in a different kind of a world. There would be no, it would not be a logical world, it would be an illogical world, and if you lived like a fool, you'd have the same results as if you lived like a wise man, because God is going to step in, and he's going to intervene. Every time you do a stupid thing where you endanger someone's life, God's going to step in, he's going to save the child, okay? Now, understand very well, if that were the case, what you're doing is you're obliterating the entire creation, the way God created man, and you're saying that if man lives like a fool, he will have the same results as if he lives like a wise man, which means there is no logical order. That's the end of the whole world of logic and reason and cause and effect and consequences, and it's a new kind, a fairyland kind of world, okay? That is not the world that the Torah describes. The Torah describes a world, that God placed us in a world where man is responsible, which means to say that if you live according to knowledge and wisdom, then you have one kind of a fate. You can effectuate your fate. If you live like a fool, then you're going to have another kind of fate. The problem is that people really want to escape the logical world that God created, and they want to live in a fantasy, an imagination world. That does not exist. This God never created. So you understand very well that it would be completely impossible for God to save man every time man does a stupid thing, because if he did that, then the whole life and the whole challenge of life which God has set forth for man could never exist. Okay? If the fool will have the same consequences as the wise man, then the whole system that God created in the universe is completely void, all right? And man would never be challenged with or charged to live according to wisdom and reality, because if he lives like a fool, the same thing is going to occur. So there would be no laws of cause and effect, and there would be no difference in human life if you live if you abandon all kinds of reason, you're going to have the same wonderful results as if you live according to reason. Obviously. Such a world is not the world that God created, that God could place man into and charge him with following a life of reason. Okay? So this is true with regard to man, all right? And it is true also with regard to society. You see, according to Torah, there are two entities, two things that have responsibility. One is the individual man, and then there is the entity. Society is also a responsible element, entity. In other words, let us say what the Torah says like this: in my individual life, I live according to reason. All right? So what happens? Now, here's a very important question, pivotal question. Let's say I live according to reason. So what does that mean? Does that mean that the effects of my reason, of living an intelligent life, of course, I will bear the fruits of the success of that result naturally from what I do, live according to reason. That I can expect, because that's the way the world works. But is that all, or does God intervene also? Okay, that's the question. Now here we find the answer is given to us in the Torah. But in order to get that answer, we have to come back to the point that I just mentioned before, that there are two responsible entities in the world. One is the individual man, and the second thing is the society on the whole. Now, this can be seen, first of all, from the seven laws of Noah, because the seven laws of Noah involve the individual, okay? For instance, the laws of idolatry, the laws not to part of the animal when it's removed during its lifetime, the laws of not to kill, not to murder, rather, not to... Okay? Now, these laws are individual laws, but now you have one law, which is a societal law, and that is to set up the courts. So you see from the structure of the seven laws of Noah that there are two entities of responsibility. One is the individual, and the other is the society. Now, when God judges man, okay, he judges him according to the individual and also according to the society. Now, this means that as long as man cannot allow himself to act intelligently as an individual and act foolishly insofar as he's a part of society, if he does that, then he's also going to suffer ill consequences. Okay? How do we know that? We know that from the story of Sodom. And this is openly described in the Torah, where God informs Abraham that Sodom is going to be destroyed, and Abraham approaches God, and he says, just a moment. He says, heaven forbid, how could you do such a thing? How could you destroy the righteous and the together with the wicked? All right? And then Abraham asks, and he says, if there are 50 righteous people in Sodom, will you forgive the city? And then he goes down, and 40, and then the 50. Then he goes down to from 50 goes down to 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. But after 10, he doesn't go anymore. That's it. So what does that show you? That shows you, so he left. And it says after he asked God, and then God says, yes, if there are 10 there, I will not destroy the city. And then what does it say? This is in Genesis 33. And God left as after he concluded speaking with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. So what does that mean? That means to say that God taught Abraham the secret of the responsibility of society. Abraham's question was not that how can a righteous individual. It wasn't his question. His question was, when you have a society and there are righteous individuals, how many righteous people are necessary in order for the society to be considered righteous? Okay, so the list, 10 was the minimum. After 10, Abraham, that was it. So that means 2 righteous people, 5 righteous people can and will suffer harm in a society if the society is evil. Okay? So God judges an individual and he judges a society. They're both responsible entities. Now, this is insofar as God's judgment. You see, God intervenes and he gives judgment to man. And also God intervenes and he helps man as well. But when does he help man and how does he help man? He never helps man in a way that removes man's responsibility. For instance, in the Torah, what does it say? If you follow the laws of the Torah, you live according to God's ways, you follow God's ways, so then it says, I'll give the rain in its time. And the earth will give forth its produce, and I'll remove illness. But it never says in the Torah that if you live in the proper way, I'll remove murderers from the land. It doesn't say that. Okay. On the contrary, the Torah says you must remove the evil from the land. So God helps man, but he never helps him in a way that he doesn't have any responsibility anymore. You see? He will never intervene and say that, oh, if you follow the way of the Torah, then that's it. You're not going to have any more murderers in the, you won't have any more thieves, you won't have any more murderers. No, that it doesn't say. It says that the rains will come in their time. There won't be any catastrophes. In other words, what God tells man is two things. If you, one is on an individual level, and the other is on a societal level. But let's take the society. If the society lives according to reason in every way, and they bring about the proper consequences that result from God's world that he created and from man living in line with that world, man does that, then God will remove external happenings, external catastrophes that can destroy him, like hurricanes or various catastrophic things that can destroy men. Then God will take care of that area. But God will never take care of the area, no matter what, God will never take care of the area that directly involves human responsibility. Because that would mean that if the society lives like fools, that what's going to happen is God's going to intervene and God's going to save some of them. That's not going to work. Okay? The same thing is true on an individual level. If an individual lives according to wisdom and the knowledge of Torah, most of his troubles, practically all of his troubles, are gone because he has a good life. He's not overcome with greed. He knows how to choose a mate properly. He knows how to raise a family properly. So he doesn't have all the problems that we see. Certain things can befall even a good person. A person can get on a plane. A good person can get on a plane. A plane is destined to crash, and the individual will succumb. So this, the Torah teaches us, that if an individual lives a righteous life every way possible, and he removes all the ill consequences based upon the fact that he lives a life of wisdom and knowledge, God does intervene and protects him from extraneous happenings that may occur and are out of his control. That is where God intervenes, okay? But God never will intervene in either an individual who lives not according to reason or a society that doesn't live according to reason. Okay? In other words, if we would open up the doors of the jails in our society and allow all the criminals to go loose and children are killed, God will not intervene. If he did, then that would mean we could live in a crazy way and we're going to have the same miracles going to happen. They're just going to save those kids. This will never happen, because if that happened, then man has no responsibility, and the whole idea, the God's whole plan, would be null and void. Okay? So the Torah teaches us how and when God intervenes. Now, in a society where people don't follow reason, and they don't follow the Torah's mandates, so then you have to expect that what's going to happen is that people are going to be harmed, and God is not going to intervene. In other words, to use this case to illustrate this case as an example, and I use it as an example because I don't wish to, I don't maintain that I'm an expert in political areas. But you know very well that there was a time when the government would have very strong surveillance on the various criminal elements and organizations that are anti-government. And then what happened was certain laws were passed, I believe, in the 70s, where the FBI was able to investigate because it was felt that it was deemed that this is not proper. You cannot spy on different organizations. Now, it makes sense. We understand there's a right of privacy, but it does not make sense, at least to me it doesn't make sense, that when you have organizations that are intrinsically hostile, that they should be protected by such laws. Now, if a society acts foolishly and is lax and acts in a way that is unintelligent, and because of that they are lax and they allow wicked people to have rights that should not have rights, okay, that's like opening up the doors of the jails and saying, well, let's get the criminals out. Let's all be friendly with them. Okay, maybe they'll change if we're friendly. If people do stupid actions, they cannot expect God to intervene and to save them from the results of their folly, because doing that would be the same thing as just destroying the whole challenge and that man is placed with, that man is given. Okay, and man is placed on this earth in order to face that challenge. That God will never intervene in. That we can be guaranteed. The Torah teaches us that God will never intervene in such a case. Okay, so the concept that that people are looking for, what they're really looking for when they ask this question, was how can this happen? And how could these unfortunate incidents take place? They are looking for a world where there is no responsibility for the society, where the society can act irresponsibly and expect good results. God's going to magically make everything work well. That does not happen. Okay, the Torah does not teach such a philosophy. The Torah teaches responsibility for the individual and responsibility for the society. If the individual or if the society act in an irresponsible way, they can expect untoward results, because everything works according to God's wisdom, his knowledge, his laws of nature, and his laws of psychology, and his laws of ethics and morality, and therefore, when these laws are violated, they're a natural Okay, so this is the answer that I am presenting to you. Now, of course, everybody's going to say, well, what happens to those children? Okay, they weren't at fault. The answer that we have for that is something which we cannot, there is no way that we can answer that question. The only thing we can say to that question is that God is just, and that's it. We cannot go into that area. What we can say is the Torah teaches us how and when God does intervene and when he does not intervene. That is the important thing to derive from the Torah. How we should act insofar as our life is concerned, our lives are concerned, and what is the situation that God gave us, and what is our responsibility, both on an individual level and a societal level.
Rabbi,
yes.
You got less than a minute.
Okay. And those two levels do exist, and God will never break the net in order to save us from our folly if we insist on acting in a foolish way. Okay.